one-year anniversary of the tragic shooting that took place at Florida State University, leaving two dead and others injured. Changes have been put in place to bolster security on campus. We'll learn more about that, hear from a former student, and discuss community resiliency.
What do we want?
Gun safety!
When do we want it?
Now!
I'll just never forget having to text everyone where they were and text my family back home and having my parents fear for my life and the life of my friends.
It's gotten easier little by little. I think it's still, you know, a lot of times I have to kind of like stop and reflect a little bit. But I walked by the Union for the first time only a couple days ago, and that was pretty heavy.
This is not like a tornado drill or a fire drill. This is something that can be completely prevented by the lawmakers in our community, and so that is what I would like to happen.
I know the school can't just close down forever. Like, these things happen everywhere, but it's just about recovering and trying to get back to being a good, happy university that we all love.
We can't let hatred and an act of violence change the place that we have. It can change us, of course, but it doesn't define who we are. What defines who we are is how we respond.
April 17th marks 1 year since the mass shooting near the FSU Student Union. Two people were killed, half a dozen were injured, and the suspect was shot by police and awaits trial. WFSU News Director Regan McCarthy is here, along with WFSU reporter Tristan Wood. You both covered the shooting. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Gina.
It's good being here.
Tristan, you talked to some students on campus this week to get a feel for how they're doing as this anniversary approaches.
Yeah, I mean, as I walked around, a lot of the people I try to speak with didn't want to be recorded and didn't want to, some of them alluded to, you know, it just being a tough time and them not feeling that they could have had the right words to encapsulate, you know, the feelings they were feeling.
Yeah.
But those that did speak with me, you know, did acknowledge that it's feeling really heavy coming into the year anniversary.
Yeah.
FSU freshman Sarah Landfair says she's concerned or, you know, feeling emotionally heavy coming onto campus this week.
Still, like, scary to know that that happened at the place that I'm attending school.
And Cecilia Eberly is a junior who was at an off-campus building when the shooting happened.
I got this necklace at Market Wednesday the day before, and I wear it pretty much every day just kind of to remind myself, like, what happened and everybody who was injured. And I don't know. It's a little, I try to keep it out of my mind, but yeah, I still think about it here and there, and it still is in the back of my mind.
Well, Tristan, thanks for going on campus and doing that. And Regan, while all of this was unfolding a year ago, many students were barricaded in classrooms, and you were able to talk to one of them.
Yes, so I talked to a student named Reed Siebold. He was in the basement of the Bellamy building at the time, and he actually reached out to our newsroom. I think he really wanted a chance to let people know what was going on. It was a very emotional moment for him, and he was looking for people to tell. He felt like people needed to know about this. So let's take a listen to a little bit of what he told me then.
Somebody in my class had told us to walk down. We turned off our lights, all barricaded, doors locked, and then about 5 minutes later, we get an alert from FSU about a dangerous activity, and then it comes over the intercoms as well, and then pretty soon after, it's confirmed as an active shooter by the university.
Okay. And then you, police came to your door and let you know that you should move to a different location? Or
they evacuated us themselves, hands up, style, similar to the videos you may have seen of Parkland. And then we were all brought to a unitary space under HCB, but they're moving us right now further west on campus.
How are you feeling right now, Reed?
I'm honestly terrified. I generally do pretty good in crazy situations. I run a disaster recovery nonprofit, but this, I feel so, like, I don't have any agency, which is the scariest thing for me to feel.
So that was just a little bit of our chat, and hearing it again, it really hits home what students were going through in that time.
Yeah, and I can report that Reed is doing well. He graduated in December, and he visited me in the studio this week. We listened to that longer interview before we started talking.
It was certainly an interesting reminder of that day. And, you know, we're coming up on a year, so it's been kind of fresh on mine lately. But I had some tears flowing. I'd be lying if I said otherwise.
Yeah, it brings a lot of stuff back that you probably haven't thought about in quite a while, I would imagine.
Very pointedly so.
Where on campus were you when the alert went out?
Yeah, I was on. I was in the basement of the Bellamy building.
Which is like right there.
Catty-cornered from the field where the shooting took place.
Yeah.
And a year out now, the full situation was that we actually found out because people were running from the shooter into our classroom. Mm-hmm. That's who ended up being the ones who told us about this. And it was quite the experience. I mean, I resorted to using ham radio to try and reach people. I mean, we were in the basement of a large concrete building, so I couldn't. But I mean, it was one of those moments where you just, you know, you reach out to everyone that you truly love and hope for the best.
Yeah. How did that situation change your senior year?
Greatly, in a word. It was a different mindset. You know, FSU was always a very, you know, safe place, mentally, physically, otherwise. And that turned it into the rest of the world, for lack of a better term. You know, everything else, it just had the same dangers as everywhere else. It no longer had the rose-colored glasses. And I was on alert the whole time. I was also, you know, busy trying to try and fix this. It made it a very active senior year, but, you know, I also had this feeling of gratitude, you know, for the opportunity to finish FSU and, you know, move on with life.
Yeah. You graduated in December?
Yes, ma'am.
You wanted to try to get legislation passed.
Yes, ma'am.
And tell us about that.
So FSU's being the state capital, it's got a lot of politicos on campus. So I called some friends and we came up with three bills, the Agent Act, the Armor Act, and the Access Act. This was a package of bills to try and increase campus safety in some manner. I ended up taking an internship in the fall, so I sent them to leadership. And then they combined them into the Armor Act, which became basically an extension of the guardianship program into the universities. It's entirely opt-in. It requires gobs of training, mental health checks, all that. You know, it's a well-done system. Thanks to Representative Saltzman, we actually passed it, and it's on the governor's desk for signature.
Good job. I mean, it's got to feel good to be able to take action after something like that and take control of it.
I can't describe the feeling. I was watching it live, the votes and debate, and I cried like a little kid. It was a feeling of accomplishment, of catharsis. So it felt right.
Yeah. Have you been paying attention specifically to this case, to what's going on with the suspect?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything you want to share about your feelings regarding this case and what should happen?
I want to see justice done as soon as expediently and as fairly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The vindictive side of me would like to see him go to prison for the rest of his life and rot. But at the same time, I acknowledge that to undertake something like this requires a great level of mental health problems. No mentally sound person would wake up one day and decide to shoot up a school. So I've prayed on it a lot. I really have. And, you know, I don't know what I want specifically. I've been on both sides of that, and I'm just not sure.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I know it's hard. Do you have plans on the day of the anniversary? What do you think you'll do?
Yes, ma'am. I actually just made them a few days ago. I was in the room with two of my closest friends. And so I hit them up the other day. I was like, you want to go camping? Just go out, be out in the middle of the woods, forget the world for a couple of days. And so we're going to go do that. It's gonna be really nice.
Well, I hope for wonderful weather.
Yes, ma'am.
You've taken some action to try to get control of the situation as best you can. How do you think your life has been changed permanently by this?
You know, I mentioned that I didn't really go anywhere without a gun before the shooting. Now it's not just that, it's a mindset change. For example, I was at the Winter Park Art Festival a few weeks ago, and they have a jazz concert on Friday night. And as I'm sitting there with my family, all I can think about is who's going to shoot up the place.
Mm.
So whenever I'm in a large, pre-announced, pre-planned public event like that, that is my number one thought, is where is the violence going to come from? And he took away that level of peace from me, and I don't think that's something that I can work to move on from, but I don't think that's ever something I'm ever going to shake, truly,
mm-hmm.
is that just gut feeling of where's the shooter.
And you carry most of the time?
Almost entirely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that we live in a pro-Second Amendment state. Because if I didn't, I wouldn't know how to go out, go to Publix, you know, go get food, hang out with my friends, do basic things that you need to do to survive. It's a way of recapturing the fear and funneling it somewhere else, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Reed, thank you for chatting with us. Is there anything you'd like to add?
As long as you have a good mindset about it, as long as you keep in contact with those you're close with, you know, seek mental health professionals if you need it. I certainly have. Then we'll get through this.
All right, Reed. Thank you so much.
Ma'am. Thank you.
So powerful stuff from Reed there. Tristan, school safety has been top of mind in the last year. It also jumped to the top of mind after the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shooting in Parkland in 2018. And even before that, we had the shooting at FSU's Strozier Library. That was in 2014, where a gunman injured three people before he was shot and killed by FSU police.
Yes, so Florida lawmakers have done a lot of work on this school safety bill that was passed. It was largely focused on requiring universities and colleges adhere to this incident reporting tool so they're able to get out the word quicker on campuses when suspicious activity is occurring. It also looks to give funding and require planning for on-campus, you know, mass shooting and other emergency trainings and planning, and also funding for school hardening stuff like allowing doors to lock and stuff like that. But as the bill was going through, one part of it, an expansion of the K-12 Guardian program, got a lot of opposition from especially a lot of Democrats in the legislature that led to this bill being one of the more contentious ones that went through the legislature this year.
Okay, great. So you just produced a story for us about that bill that lawmakers passed this year. So let's listen to that.
The School Safety Act did a lot. It requires higher education institutions to promote the use of a suspicious activity reporting tool. Requires K-12 schools to send psychological evaluations to the college system, and makes colleges and universities adopt assailant response plans and update security infrastructure.
We have to be prepared to take action. We have to have the training, the plan, the funding to take that action, and that was the purpose of our legislation.
Pensacola Republican Senator Don Gates said the FSU shooting was a direct inspiration for the legislation that he sponsored.
We had had a shooting previously at FSU, and then to have another one now just underscored what seemed to be the case, a growing case around the country, and that is that what all of us thought were safe spaces for study and reflection and learning were becoming targets for absolutely crazy criminal people who were trying to disrupt and take lives.
But the most talked about part of the bill was the expansion of the state's Guardian program to higher education. It allows universities to opt in to allowing certain faculty and staff to carry firearms on campus. A similar program is already in effect at Florida's K-12 schools. It was approved in 2018 as part of a larger package around the shooting that year at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. Some Democratic lawmakers, like Parkland Representative Christine Hunchofsky, expressed concerns that it would put those people in harm's way and could create confusion in emergencies.
Then the question becomes, when another police officer, maybe from the city or the area, comes on campus, do they know who the good guy is with the gun? And do they know who the bad guy is with the gun? And that is concerning to me, that they may not know that.
But Gates called the Guardian program the smallest piece of the broader package. To him, the campus hardening aspects and mental health provisions are the most important parts, because most of Florida's colleges and universities have open designs.
We didn't build our universities and our colleges as fortresses, and we don't want to consider them as fortresses, but we do want to make sure that we can take and do take precautions to make sure that we do what requires common sense, making sure doors lock, making sure people can't get to rooftops, and making sure that the people who are there on the campuses who have responsibility have a plan, that they are trained, that we are identifying people who might be a threat and providing intervention before things happen.
As of this recording, the bill has not been signed or vetoed, and how much funding it will receive is tied up in current budget talks. If it does become law, the decision on whether to utilize the Guardian program will be up to each university individually. I went to Florida State University's campus to speak to students about whether they want it on campus.
I'm just scared of guns in general.
Sarah Landfair is a freshman engineering student. She's concerned more guns on campus could cause more incidents, like having them being taken away from a teacher.
So I understand like the aspect of it being like used for protection and in a good way, but I also can see how it could backfire.
Ava Osborne thinks more guns could mentally impact students.
Especially here when so many people have been affected by the use of a firearm, it's going to scare people more than it's going to help people feel safe, I think.
Avery Harrell, a junior political science major, says she thinks more guns isn't the answer.
And I understand their point of being able to protect the students, but a better way to protect the students from guns is to put laws in place that prevent students from getting guns.
Most of the people who spoke about the issue with me were anti-gun, but dozens of students declined to be interviewed on the issue. College students tend to have views about guns that are more restrictive. A 2024 Gallup poll found 4 in 5 current or prospective college students care about their school's gun policies. Most of those that care wanted tough restrictions that made it hard to have guns on campus or banned them outright. The poll did not particularly discuss arrangements like the Guardian program, where designated employees can have firearms.
All right, thanks for that, Tristan.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, as I alluded to a little bit in the story, the fate of that bill is kind of undecided a little bit. How much funding is going to be received for a lot of those campus hardening things is one of the questions that's up for grabs as lawmakers still haven't decided a budget for this next fiscal year.
Right.
So whenever they do come back, whether it's next week during that special session or a special session down the line, however, the legislature is required to resolve their budget before July 1st, which is mm-hmm. when the next fiscal year starts. So a budget will get done, and this will be one of the items that universities across the state will be paying attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, and as Tristan mentioned, the idea of school safety and campus safety is getting a lot of attention, not just from the legislature, but also from higher education leaders. So the Florida Board of Governors, which oversees state universities, actually took up school safety at their meeting in late March. They have a committee dedicated to campus and student safety.
Right. So they got an update from several folks, including FSU's Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration, Kyle Clark. He told the board that many safety initiatives were in the works prior to last year's shooting, and he noted that there have been upgrades and resources added for safety.
We've developed several different training videos and modules to educate the faculty, staff, and students so that they know what to do and how to use these tools in the case of an emergency. In addition to that, we've added full-time staff that are strictly focused on making sure that the technology works, it's routinely tested, and that we are maintaining it in proper and good working order. We also hired an outside consultant to review all of the technology that our public safety department uses to make sure that we had the latest and greatest tools available to them. There were a number of recommendations that were made. One of them included centralizing all of the cameras on campus under public safety. We have done that since then. We have over 2,200 cameras on campus. We have over 100 license plate readers that are on campus. We have also turned to AI in terms of utilizing that to perform many functions for us that are new and that are, I think, best practices and world class. And so that's paid significant dividends to the university already. We are working with other law enforcement officials to develop heat maps and crime data for where incidents happen on our campus. And we're going out and we're putting cameras in those particular locations and places. In addition to that, we have a new research center on campus with world-class faculty with expertise in spatial data, and we're utilizing their expertise in terms of where events happen and to make sure that we're being proactive in those areas.
And that was FSU Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration, Kyle Clark. We have more coming up about safety on the FSU campus, as well as he mentioned AI. Tristan, is there anything you can add about just the general feeling you got, the vibes you got this week when you were on campus?
So when I stopped and spoke with students, you know, they did express concern and mourning and reverence going into the year anniversary. But an important thing to keep in mind as well is that, you know, the student union was packed and everyone was, you know, studying and focusing on, you know, why they're at Florida State University, which is to, you know, grow as people, to get an education, and to connect with their peers. And I did see that around campus. So although it's coming up in the year anniversary, you know, a lot of the safety measures that were in place when it happened that caused the shooting to be dealt with quickly, and the stuff that's being put in place now, it seems like the students on campus are, although the thoughts rest heavy on the mind, they're still doing what they're at Florida State University to do.
Walking near there, seeing like the memorials and stuff, just remembering how it was for everybody.
I think anniversaries for tragedies are hard for everybody, and everyone's been coping with everything in such different ways. It makes me really sad to think about how many people really are impacted so severely.
Gina Jordan is joined by Florida State University Police Chief Jason Trumbauer to discuss his memory of that consequential day and touch on additional security measures put in place since. We'll also get an update from campus librarians about memorial items that have been preserved.
People that I haven't even spoken to in years who don't go to FSU were texting me and like asking if I was okay and my friends, and just trying to get into contact with everybody was really hectic.
That was FSU junior Cecilia Eberle remembering the day a year ago that a gunman opened fire outside the student union. He wound up being taken down by FSU police. He was shot and injured. I chatted with FSU Police Chief Jason Trumbauer via Zoom this week. He's been with the department for over 27 years.
10 days before, you know, the April 17th event is when I became official in this new role as the chief.
I'm going to guess that was your first big test as chief.
You could say that, yeah. To be honest with you, I think getting an active assailant call is any law enforcement officer's worst nightmare come true. So, yeah, to have that happen at any point is tough, but to have it 10 days into a new position was especially challenging.
Yeah. I'm sure that day was a blur, but is there anything in particular that always sticks out to you about that day?
I would say, you know, as chaotic as it was, I did get a sense of calm. And I think some of that was just having a long career and you know, preparing. And you never really know until it happens. I went through one of these, unfortunately, in 2014 with the Treasure Library event. But as I heard our officers, all the brave men and women that work at FSU PD, on the radio and tactically approaching in the first couple minutes, I felt a sense of calm knowing that, you know, in my role, I'm like, are we prepared for this? And the answer was, yes, we train a lot. They were amazing that day. They responded and you never want to have to be put in that position, but they were, and they saved lives and took out the threat. I think their response time exactly was 2 minutes and 19 seconds from the time we got the call till the suspect was down.
FSU PD, I remember you guys really were lauded for the swift response. I imagine this kind of training is ongoing, fortunately, but unfortunately?
It is, yeah. We actually located an abandoned old elementary school a couple counties over, and we were able to use that with like simunition fire, and we use our actual real Glocks with basically paint bullets in them to make it more real. And we set up real-life scenarios for single-officer response. So we were intentional in our training for single-officer response and scenarios, you know, just a couple months prior to the shooting.
Mm-hmm. I know some tools were in progress, really, when this shooting happened. Can you just talk a little bit about some of these changes that you guys have made in the last year since the shooting?
You know, I'll just say really quick, a credit and plug to President McCullough and our senior vice president, Kyle Clark. You know, I was able to walk side by side with them in the months after the shooting and got to see firsthand just the investment and time that they took to really pour into making Florida State as safe as possible. And really, that requires you to look back, and as impressive as our response was, there's always ways to improve, right? And to get better, and just things that so in our after actions and looking back, you know, we figured out that we needed to harden some of the classrooms. A lot of those doors could lock, and they were in locked classrooms, but there was really no way for them to know for sure that the door was locked in a panic. So we installed over 700 locking mechanisms across campus that in classrooms that are really easy. It's just a turn dial. And literally it's unlock, lock, and it says it at the top. And then with our card access, those were also on lockdown, but there's really no way for folks to know that that door is locked, right, from the inside. So they have panic buttons, and all the classrooms do now, but for the card access, there's panic buttons that light up when you hit it, which automatically calls our police dispatch that there's an active assailant situation going on, and those doors are locked when that light lights up. We were already in progress of stages and phases with our cameras. Now we've got over 2,000 cameras and 3,000 views through those cameras across campus. So we've exponentially increased that, in addition to increasing our license plate readers, our LPRs, which has really helped. And there's been a significant investment in some AI technology and things for weapon detection that I don't want to get too far into, because it's, you know, tools and things that we use for intel, but it's been a big help since April 17th.
That has to go a long way, I would think, to reassure students and staff. And we have heard from some who are nervous. There are those that are very nervous and not too comfortable right now. Is there anything else you could say to them as we are coming upon this anniversary to try to put them at ease?
Just that, you know, look, that it's okay to be nervous and emotional. That was an emotional day, and it's been emotional, you know, ever since. But know that our police department, we are always fully committed to the safety and security of our faculty, staff, and students. That's our mission. That's what we do. That's what drives us every week. Especially for this week, we're going to have a lot more resources out and about. There's not going to be many large footprints or buildings where you're not going to see police out for this week. And that's not to give panic or anything. We're going to be out easy breezy and hopefully putting people's fears at rest and just visible and ready to talk. And look, you know, see something, say something. We say it all the time. But if there's anything or any issue or people think, you know, things are just not right or, you know, suspicious, we're around and we want people to report it. But we definitely will be visible.
And to wrap this up, I want to add that I know that this is very much about your officers and your department as well. You all went through a lot, and I'm guessing that at least some officers might still be dealing with the aftermath of that. I know that you had an outpouring of thanks, and I just want to ask how your officers are doing. How is the department doing as far as just what you all went through and how you've been able to go on since then.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's look, that's a hot topic across the country, officer wellness. And, you know, I think people sometimes forget, kind of like teachers or medical or anyone, and especially military, that's been in the forefront. But, you know, there's human beings behind the uniforms, right? And as much as we're paid to stay calm and compartmentalize and handle things, there's a human element, and it does take a toll over time. So I've, you know, pride myself in being present with that. I want people to be open about their feelings. We've offered all kinds of resources since April 17th, especially the folks that were, you know, immediately impacted and involved. I've worked with our Vice President, Renisha Gibbs of Human Resources. She's been wonderful through the whole experience, and other departments across campus. The outpouring of support really in the Tallahassee community has been amazing and a huge help. You know, we had a wall of thousands of cards. It was really amazing and cathartic, I think, for a lot of people throughout the year just to have that. I think we just took that stuff down not too long ago. That was a huge help, just everyone rallying together. And, you know, sadly enough, when something like April 17th happens, you never want that to happen, but it was such a rallying point.
Well, Chief Trumbauer, thank you for what you do to lead FSU PD, and thank you to you and your officers, and we wish you the best this week. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Regan, Chief Trumbauer talked about the wall of cards. A significant memorial popped up with cards and stuffed animals and a lot more near that shooting site.
Yes, that's right. And those items are now being preserved.
So here's a bit of your story from last year about those efforts.
Not far from the Student Union Building, a near constant stream of university employees and students are walking, arms loaded with items from the nearby memorials. They're carrying them to a row of folding tables where the items are sorted.
Thousands of flower bouquets, hundreds of objects and candles, hundreds of notes and cards.
Katie McCormick is the Associate Dean for Special Collections and Archives for University Libraries. She's overseeing the documentation, collection, and preservation of the memorials. The majority of the bouquets will be composted, with a plan that the compost could be used for future memorial plantings by the university. Some of the flowers will be kept and dried. Still living plants will be planted or distributed. And then there are the items.
The hats, teddy bears, framed poems, pictures, candles in glass containers, anything with a message. The archives team are here packing those materials into archival boxes.
McCormick says her team will then review those items to ensure nothing has been damaged or is in need of further preservation work. Then they'll be inventoried, and eventually a catalog of the objects will be posted online. McCormick had just arrived on campus the day of the shooting. She says she heard shots ringing out and saw students running. She made her way to the library to help. She's been focused on helping ever since, and says she hasn't yet taken time to reflect.
I'm not ready to sit with these notes yet myself, but I'm grateful that they're going to be there when it's time. And it's, for me personally, an important aspect to be able to bring my professional skills and experience and to help my team and others bring their skills to contribute to the healing of the community. And that's a step in my own healing in this process.
So Katie and her team have just actually completed the first step of that cataloging process. They just wrapped that up this past Friday. She worked with Rory Grinnan, the director of archives, and Taylor Henning, university archivist, to direct groups of volunteer students to survey and write descriptions of each memorial item. And after each of those sessions working with the students, Rory and Taylor met with the students for a quick Q&A and also a moment of reflection.
I met students that knew one of the men that was killed. A lot of students shared their stories about their April 17th, what happened to them over the course of the day. We had one student who found her own memorial object that she had left at one of the sites, and that was kind of, I think that was a powerful moment for her. It was a little powerful for me, too. Those resources on trauma-related collections are not just for the students. They're for us, too. What else? What else has come up in the Q&As?
Well, we had one student that was here for every session but one over the course of, I think, the summer and the two semesters that we were doing the project. And he described it, I don't know if he used the word cathartic, but he described it as the process of going through, because essentially they were describing item by item and transcribing the first line of each letter, for example. He described it as essentially cathartic, that just the process of going one by one is sort of like a calming, he described it as centering. So I think this project was successful, and not only did it allow us to get everything described in the end, but the members of the community got to engage with the materials and sort of find healing through the process, I think.
So Taylor and Rory say that for many people, the anniversary that's coming up here is really bringing these feelings up in a fresh and new way. But for them and the students that they've been working with, they've actually been sitting with these feelings for this past year. And it's given them a time, a chance to reflect in a deeper way, I think. And they say one of the messages that's really come through reviewing these notes and reviewing these items is a message of resiliency, of love, and of community support. And for Katie McCormick, who's been really overseeing this process, she says for her, that same message has really carried through, but it's just the beginning of what she thinks is a long healing process to come.
You know, again, every individual has their own experience. I was here. I was getting out of my car in the parking lot when I heard the shots fired. I was responsible for the libraries that day. So there's a lot about those steps. There's a lot about individual moments in the day. There's a lot about how that day affected close friends of mine, how it affected our campus community, thinking about the families that I don't know that you're ever done processing that, right? I think that these are not, you know, this is experiencing tragic events is not about, for me, in my perspective, is not about getting over things. It's about navigating and building community and response in a way that can help you navigate the moments that the sad parts of that appear, and to find the beautiful parts in that that help you get through it. And that these are things we will all carry in our lives in different ways that will appear in different moments.
Wow, Regan, that sounds like a really powerful effort to help the community heal. So where does this project stand now?
Yeah, indeed. So the next step in this process is reviewing the notes and descriptions that the students have written, and then uploading that inventory so that people can find those. So they know, you know, this box corresponds with these items, this note is located in this space, and then figuring out a long-term storage plan. And Katie says also, collecting continues. This Friday, the Student Government Association is going to be giving students another opportunity to leave flowers, to leave notes, to create more memorial objects. And Katie says she and her team are committed to continuing to document that important part of our FSU community's history.
The suspect was taken into custody immediately after being detained by police and has been awaiting trial ever since. We'll hear an update on that case, followed by a conversation on trauma with an expert who's been on FSU's faculty for over 50 years.
I think
There's a really heavy air just lingering around campus. It's kind of one of those things that people do talk about behind closed doors, but it's scary to talk about it. It's scary to think that it's been almost a year now, and I know it impacts everyone so much, and it just makes me nervous.
That was Ava Osborne, a junior at FSU. She shared her feelings about being on campus this week. Tristan, bring us up to date on the potential involvement of AI in this legal case.
So this conversation around AI's use in the shooting was kind of kickstarted when attorneys representing the family of Robert Morales, one of the victims, say they plan to sue OpenAI and ChatGPT. Court filings show that accused gunman Phoenix Eichner may have entered more than 200 prompts into ChatGPT just ahead of the attack. That revelation has led Florida Attorney General James Uffmeyer to announce an investigation into OpenAI and its product, ChatGPT. And although that's what's being discussed heavily in this case, it's been covered nationally because it's kind of one of several examples of lawsuits emerging around AI platforms being used in mass casualty events or having disastrous mental health outcomes for people who use it and then commit acts of self-harm. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the latest touch point in these national conversations about what limits and controls should be placed on artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Gina, I wanted to point out, too, that separately, Phoenix Eichner's trial is scheduled for October, and he's charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 7 counts of attempted first-degree murder.
Okay, so Eichner is now 21 years old. He was an FSU student when this happened. He is, just for some background, he's the stepson of a Leon County Sheriff's deputy. Investigators say he used his stepmom's old service weapon for this mass shooting. He was on the sheriff's youth advisory council. He had some gun training. So he was shot by FSU police, and he had surgery and lots of treatment, and he is now awaiting trial.
Right. And Gina, this is something that's hanging over people. The university knows this first anniversary will be hard for a lot of folks. So at noon on April 17th, the university says the sound of bells will be heard around campus, and the bells will be followed by a moment of silence. And the Student Government Association, as I mentioned earlier, has created space for reflection on the legacy walk between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. And also the Unconquered statue at the stadium will be lit all day as a symbol of remembrance and resilience.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you for your reporting on this. That was a terrible day. And thank you for bringing us this information. I want to end with a chat I had about the anniversary with Dr. Sally Carrieth. She's an FSU professor who deals with trauma, grief, and loss. She's been on the faculty here since 1970.
Our students here at Florida State knew that people in schools and churches and backyards were shot and killed, and so they weren't surprised, but they were just absolutely stunned that it was their backyard. And the kiddos that were in the Union, in Bellamy, in the basement, walking across campus. Some of those kiddos were just 2 feet away. That changes you. There's an important thing that we all, I think, don't necessarily embrace about trauma and the difference between trauma and grief. They aren't the same. Trauma comes back as a reaction, not a memory. If you were in the middle of a shooting that's 15 minutes away and something reminds you of it, the memory comes back. The bear is back. And yeah. It now becomes biological.
Yeah.
And the nausea comes back and the fear comes back. And you're sick for a couple of days and you have a headache for a while. And you're hypervigilant and you lock your doors twice. And that's the difference.
In the last couple of weeks or so, you're hearing from students that are having flashbacks. They're just feeling terribly uneasy.
Including my TA. She was in the basement at Bellamy. She said, I'm just really out of sorts and I can't figure out what it is. I said, well, tell me. And she said, well, I've got kind of this low-grade headache. Food doesn't taste good. I'm having trouble sleeping. And she was describing to me what a flashback is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people describe panic attacks, they're often describing flashbacks, and they don't know it. Something triggered them. they don't make it all the way back to the event, but they begin manifesting psychosomatic symptoms that would indicate a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Those reactions that people call panic attacks are often undiagnosed moments of hypervigilance or trauma incidents.
Is that the best way to help someone who is having flashbacks, talking through it?
Yeah. If you don't let your brain talk about it or think about it, it will try to do it anyway.
Yes.
You might think you're perfectly fine, and 10 years later, all of a sudden, you have this horrible nightmare. If it keeps going on, the chances are there's still a splinter in your brain of that event, and it's, for whatever reason, works itself to the top of your head, mm-hmm. and now it's back to look at you. And you can't use things like, well, I just won't think about it. That's why you're having the flashbacks, because you just won't think about it. So these kiddos that are getting just uneasy is this anticipatory event is coming. And in 99% of these kids, they'll be okay. But if we take into effect that of my 100 students, 10 of them were raised in dysfunctionally toxic environments, they are much more at risk for having these kinds of things affect them badly.
Mm.
The majority of those kids, when a week or two goes by, they're back to being okay.
Yeah.
And those feelings will get less and less, but they are very valid.
They are.
And that is why you have to know that what you're doing is so, while sad and scary, so normal.
I think that is so important. One person might be able to handle this much better than the next person.
That's what it's all completely about. Kids really don't know where to put feelings. And there are really only a couple emotions associated with grief and trauma, and that's mad and sad. So if they're furious and angry all the time and acting up, that doesn't look like grief and trauma. But if I take the angry mask off, you can see it's always grief.
Just from a general depression or mental health standpoint, how do you think we're doing since then?
Interestingly enough, after the shooting, I had a couple of faculty members ask me if I would come to their class and talk to their kids because they didn't feel they were equipped to know what to say or do. And I mm-hmm. thought that was a really lovely, intuitive thing for those faculty people to do. What you say to yourself is, I deserve to manage this and to have someone help me do it. I don't have to just get over it. We're maybe talking about 3 to 5% that are still really struggling versus, yeah. Oh yeah, it was such an awful day. Let's go out and have lunch with your friends or take a walk or go to St. George for the day or not go to, I'm sorry, but not going to classes may be the thing you want to do that day. That's self-care. Things happen. And if you're in a good space, then you manage them. The rule has to be, don't give a lecture to someone that needs a hug.
Yeah.
That's really the kernel of it.
Dr. Sally Caria, thank you so much.
It was lovely to be here.
That's it for this week's Speaking of Radio Hour. Got something to say? An idea for a show? Drop us a line at speakingof@wfsu.org. We want to hear from you. The Speaking of Radio Hour is brought to you by the fabulous, wonderful, yet overworked storytellers here at WFSU Public Media. Talk soon.